I want you to direct your attention back to 1 Kings chapter number 11, where we're going to begin in verse 26 in a moment. We, last session, took note of how Solomon broke bad. He fell off of his relationship with the one true living God and began not just simply allowing his pagan wives, and he had a lot of them, 700 wives and 300 concubines, to worship their pagan deities over there on the Mount of Olives across the Kidron Valley from Jerusalem. Solomon went and participated. He actually became a worshiper of these deities. He became a polytheist. And this is why God permitted some opponents to arise against King Solomon toward the end of his reign. Now, he reigns a total of 40 years. And so my guess is, and I've shared this with you before, is that at some point after Solomon finished the temple and finished his palace complex, and that would have happened in about the 24th year of his reign, I think, 20 years after he started the building project of the temple. He began having all of these people come into his empire capital, and they're impressed, they're amazed, they're shocked. The Queen of Sheba describes herself as being breathless because all of the things that she saw. And I believe that's when he started having even more of these marriages, even more of these treaty arrangements. And then he began to let his heart be taken away from the true living God. And so God had already permitted a couple of people from David's past rise up in the fringes of Solomon's world. And so toward the end of Solomon's reign, they start causing more trouble. But now we have a very specific person who becomes key in the splitting of the kingdom. His name is Jeroboam. 1 Kings chapter 11, verse 26. Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, an Ephraimite of Zeredah, which means he's from the country north of Judea, north of Jerusalem area. It's part of the hill country of the area just north of the Judea area and Benjamin area. And so he was a servant of Solomon. More detail on that in a moment. Whose mother's name was Zeruiah, a widow, he also lifted up his hand against the king. Now, he didn't start out being an opponent of King Solomon. He starts by being his worker. Verse 27, this was the reason why he lifted up his hand against the king. Solomon built the Milo. And we talked about this earlier, that when Solomon finished the temple and began building his palace complex between the temple on the north and the city of David on the south, the oldest part of Jerusalem, the little oval hill that's south of what we call the Temple Mount today, he begins to wall in all of this new area to the north of the ancient city. And one of the tie-in points is the Milo. The Milo seems to be this stone stair step that goes down to the east from the palace that's on the north end of the city of David. Been there a couple of times, seen this archaeological site. It's a terrace retaining wall on the east side of this big stone structure, which was probably the ancient Canaanite fortress or palace, which then David took over, renovated, and turned to his own palace. So Solomon ties in the wall that goes north on the east side of New Jerusalem, the new section, and it goes up and to the top of the Temple Mount and then goes westward, encapsulates or encloses the temple structure area, and then it comes down on the west side and ties in to the other side of the north end of the ancient city of Jerusalem. So that's what it's talking about here, is that Solomon was building the wall and everything that tied in his new city with his old city. And so he closed up the breach of the city of David, his father. So now we've got a city of Jerusalem that is twice, a little bit over twice the size it originally was. Verse 28, the man, Jeroboam, was very able. And when Solomon saw that the young man was industrious, he gave him charge over all the forced labor of the house of Joseph. So Jeroboam was involved in the building projects that were going on, perhaps the building of the palace, maybe even as far back as the building of the temple. But in particular, he comes to Solomon's attention during this enclosure of the new city with the wall. And he's so impressed with this guy that he puts him in charge of all of those who have been drafted into construction work coming out of the tribal area of Ephraim and Manasseh. So he's a big wig in the work crews. Verse 29, at that time when Jeroboam went out of Jerusalem. Now, the time that we're talking about, I believe, has to be just a couple of years at the most before Solomon dies. And here's my reason for that. In a little bit, we're going to meet a new Egyptian pharaoh. His name is Sheshonq, or Shishak in our English Bibles more often than not. We are pretty sure that he came to the throne of Egypt in 943 BC. And by my estimation, Solomon dies in 941. And so Jeroboam is going to run off to Sheshonq in Egypt, which means that we've got to be somewhere between 943 BC and 941 BC. Okay? So the man Jeroboam, he goes out of the city of Jerusalem, and the prophet Ahijah, the Shilonite, found him on the road. So Jeroboam is probably leaving Jerusalem to go north, back to his area of residence, where he comes from. Maybe he's going to go and work with some work crews again up that direction. But he gets met by another person that comes from that general vicinity, a man who must have been born or certainly is living at Shiloh. And he is a prophet. Now, Ahijah had dressed himself in a new garment, probably an outer robe, and the two of them were alone in the open country. So Ahijah meets him. As they're traveling along, they have a private conversation. So how do we know about this? Because Ahijah is one of the people who contributes to these inspired writings. We know that from the 2 Chronicles 9 passage there at the end of that chapter. So what happens on the road? Verse 30. Then Ahijah laid hold of the new garment that was on him. So he took off either this mantle or this robe, and he tore it into 12 pieces. Now that's a shocking thing to do with clothing, because clothing is a very expensive item to begin with. But a brand new set of clothing, that's really shocking that he would do this. Perhaps they'd even conversed about this idea that it was brand new. but he rips it into 12 pieces. And then he said to Jeroboam, take for yourself 10 pieces, for thus says he who is the God of Israel, behold, I am about to tear the kingdom from the hand of Solomon and will give you 10 tribes. So that's the reason for the 12 pieces of this new garment being ripped up by the prophet. It is a object lesson. It is a sign for him to remember very clearly. There's 12 tribes that have property. We're not going to count the Levitical tribe because they are scattered among the other 12 tribes. So Ahia says, I need you to take 10 of these pieces because God says he's going to rip up Solomon's kingdom of 12 tribes and give you 10 of them. Verse 32, but he shall take have one tribe for the sake of my servant David and for the sake of Jerusalem, the city that I have chosen out of all the tribes of Israel. Now, this little parenthetical bit of information may be added in later by Ahia to explain that the tribe of Judah, because it wraps around the city of Jerusalem on the south, is going to be retained as an independent tribe. God is not going to give that to Jeroboam. Now, the fact that there's the tribe of Simeon that is also tied in with the tribe of Judah is probably why only 10 are given to Jeroboam and 2 remain in the control of the son of David, the son of Solomon. Rehoboam is his name, and we'll be talking about him a little bit more later. Now, the Benjamin tribe, though, is interesting because it's actually on the borderland between the two groups that are going to come into existence. The tribe of Benjamin's territory wraps around the north side of the city of Jerusalem. And so even though Jeroboam is actually given the tribe of Benjamin, some of the people in the tribe of Benjamin are going to gravitate instantly to Judah and to also Simeon on the south side of the border that's going to come into existence. Just a little logistical information ahead of time. Now, why is this happening? Verse 33, the prophet continues, because they, not just simply Solomon, they have forsaken me and worshipped Ashtaroth, the goddess of the Sidonians, Chemosh, the god of Moab, Milcom, or Molech is the other spelling or pronunciation of the name here. It's a variation on the word for king, Melech. The god of the Ammonites, and all three of those were mentioned as part of Solomon's traitorous abandonment of the worship of the one true God. So they are not walking in my ways, doing what is right in my sight, and keeping my statutes and my rules, as David his father did. So David had some of his own issues, but worshiping other gods and goddesses was never, ever on his radar. And so Solomon and a lot of the people that are following Solomon are now becoming polytheists. And this is going to bring God's instantaneous judgment. Verse 34, nevertheless, I will not take the whole kingdom out of his hand, but I will make him ruler all the days of his life for the sake of David, my servant, whom I chose, who kept my commandments and my statutes. Now, since I've already talked about the idea, I think this is probably happening in 943. maybe 942. Solomon's only got a couple of years left anyway. And so God's basically saying, it doesn't matter. He can't do too much more damage. I am going to, out of respect for his father, David, allow him to finish his life. And then, verse 35, I will take the kingdom out of his son's hands and will give it to you, 10 tribes. Yet to his son, I will give one tribe. That's Judah specifically, but remember, Simeon is always with inside of the boundaries of the tribe of Judah. I will give one tribe that David my servant may always have a lamp before me in Jerusalem, the city where I have chosen to put my name. So that's the important point here, is that Jerusalem is going to remain the capital city for the Judah tribe that's going to be left. That's where the king is going to reign from, but that is also where the temple is, where God selected his name to be represented on planet Earth during this time period. And so that's not going to change. Jerusalem will always remain in the hands of a Davidic king. Verse 37, and I will take you, and you shall reign over all that your soul desires, and you shall be king over Israel. Now, this is the first time that we are introduced to this concept, that the northern tribes are going to be referred to by the ancient unified name of Israel. The southern remaining tribes, Judah, Simeon, and a little bit of the Benjamites, and then all the others that will immigrate from the north into the south, that kingdom will be referred to by the tribal name Judah. And so we'll talk about northern Israel and southern Judah a lot. And so this is the first time we see that distinction. If, so this is conditional to Jeroboam, just like it was conditional to Saul and David and Solomon. If you will listen to all that I command you and will walk in my ways and do what is right in my eyes by keeping my statutes and my commandments as David my servant did, I will be with you and will build you a sure house as I built for David, and I will give Israel to you. So God's offer to Jeroboam is, if you will just honor me and the covenant, I will honor you, and your dynasty will last. But it's conditional, and that is why the Jeroboam dynasty does not last. Now, you might ask the question, well, why'd God even give him this offer if God already knew he wasn't going to follow through with it? Because the offer is made to Jeroboam's free will. We have to have the opportunity to act right, or our free will really isn't being highlighted, is it? So God gives him the chance, even though he knows he won't take it, because God honors the gift of free will. Continuing, verse 39, and I will afflict the offspring of David because of this, but not forever. So God tells Jeroboam, if you'll just behave yourself, I'll be with you. But as for those guys that have not been behaving themselves, I'm going to be against them. I'm going to invoke the curses of the covenant. But I'm not going to do it permanently. I'm not going to wipe these guys out. I'm not going to terminate my relationship with them. And so that is important as the story progresses toward the New Testament period. All right, so verse 40. We don't have everything that happened immediately after Jeroboam got this information. We just know that he became some sort of adversary to King Solomon. Maybe he just spoke out more often against what Solomon was doing wrong. And we'll get more details in a bit. But Solomon was actually turning into a full-fledged tyrant. He was enslaving people. Not because they owed money, but just because he needed workers. And even though he had kind of drafted non-Israelis into the harder work within his kingdom, he begins doing it to Israelis as well, ethnic Israelis, putting them into draft positions, working them hard. He's taxing everybody heavily, and he is being abusive, evidently, of those who are carrying on his construction programs, because he's apparently doing a lot of construction programs. And so it appears to me that Jeroboam, being kind of the boss of the draft labor coming out of the north area, out of what we're going to start referring to as northern Israel, he objects to this, and Solomon doesn't like that. So verse 40, Solomon sought therefore to kill Jeroboam. He wanted him dead. But Jeroboam arose and fled into Egypt to Shishak, or Shishonk, is how you'll see him in Wikipedia and Encyclopedia Britannica. The king of Egypt, or the pharaoh of Egypt, and he was in Egypt until the death of Solomon. And as I already said, Shishonk came to power in 943 BC. Solomon had a couple of more calendar years of life in him when that happened. So Jeroboam goes down there and lives in Egypt in exile during those last couple of years. So let's go ahead and say our goodbyes to King Solomon at this point. 1 Kings 11:41. Now the rest of the acts of Solomon and all that he did and his wisdom, are they not written in the book of the Acts of Solomon? Which we don't have a book like that in our Bible, although we have probably a lot of that information here in 1 Kings and in 2 Chronicles. And the time that Solomon reigned in Jerusalem over all Israel was 40 years. Now that's apparently 40 years since David put him on the throne, I believe. Let me check my notes to see if that is exactly what I had done here. Yes, the 40 years of since David put him on the throne, so since he was a teenager still. And then Solomon slept with his fathers and was buried in the city of David, his father. Now, the city of David is always a reference to that oval of the ancient city of Jebus to the south of the Temple Mount. The royal tombs are probably on the southeast side of that ancient city of Jerusalem. South of the Gihon Spring, but north of the Pool of Siloam. And so that's where they bury him. And Rehoboam, his son, reigned in his place. Now that was a given. That was an automatic that Rehoboam was going to be the next king because he was the oldest son of King Solomon. He was 41 years old when his dad passes. Probably a good 30 days of mourning over King Solomon. And then we have an official enthronement or coronation, which is decided to be done up at Shechem. Now, why Shechem? Well, because Shechem is where the blessing and the cursing ceremonies took place at the beginning of Israel's history. It was the place where the land was divided up. So it's the place where the shrine of the Ten Commandments was located. Remember, they put up the Ten Commandments on standing stones, possibly even the entire book of Deuteronomy. And so this was a special place from very early on in Israeli history. And so chapter 12, as we start winding down today, says, Rehoboam went to Shechem, for all Israel had come to Shechem to make him king. Now, my suspicion is that they may have been doing this in association with the seventh month of the year, which was always, at this time, the first day of the next year of a king. The regnal year began on the first day of the seventh month during this time in Israeli history. So even though I think Solomon died earlier in this year and Rehoboam was considered the new king, I think when the seventh month rolled around, everybody gathered to Shechem to celebrate the first full official year of King Rehoboam. And I believe that that would have been 941 BC, which also happened to be the kickoff for the 68th sabbatical year of the Israeli people. So we've got a couple of big things happening at the same time here. And all of Israel is coming together, but a lot of the people from the northern tribes are quite frustrated with how things have been going recently.